I am Plata on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Zoe Whittle joins me now. She's just published a new collection, No Credit River. Through prose poetry, she looks back at abandoned love, trauma, the loss of a pregnancy, the complexity of queer relationships, and isolation. It's a recent six-year period that she looks back on that she's come out of. I'll ask her about the wisdom that she might have gleaned from the experience and the understanding that she hopefully obtained, having thoughtfully reflected on it all. There are some pieces in the book that are personal, and it's remarkable to see the insight she shares, as well as the growth of a person that comes with the passage of time. I'll ask Zoe about the process of writing prose poetry and how different it might be from other forms of writing that she does. I'll ask her about the writing community in this country, which is something she discusses throughout the collection. Zoe Whittle is the author of the short story collection Wild Failure and five best-selling novels, including The Fake, The Spectacular, The Best Kind of People, Holding Still for As Long as Possible, and Bottle Rocket Hearts. Her previous poetry collections include Precordial Thump, The Emily Valentine Poems, and The Best 10 Minutes of Your Life. Her work has won a Lambda Literary Award, the Writers' Trust Dane Ogilvie Award, and has and been shortlisted for the Scotiabank Giller Prize. She has worked as a TV writer on the Emmy Award-winning comedy show Schitt's Creek and the Baroness Von Sketch Show, for which she won a 2018 Canadian Screen Award. This new collection is published by Book Hug Press. She was born in the eastern townships of Quebec and now lives in Prince Edward County, Ontario, where she joined me from 1 week ago. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Zoe Whittle. Ms. Whittle, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Anytime.
I found the book, because it's derived from something so personal, so painful, this collection, almost... difficult to read in that I was intruding on something that I probably shouldn't be reading. I guess you can do that in poetry much more than any other form of writing, I'd assume.
I mean, I definitely felt hesitant at certain points in the writing process, and I definitely actually pulled back on a lot of the more personal and vulnerable details that were in some of the original drafts.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually I felt like everybody writes about heartbreak. Everybody writes about grief. If there were no breakup albums, there wouldn't be Stevie Nicks, the band.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There wouldn't be a Rumours album, a Fleetwood Mac Rumours album. And so I started to feel like I wanted to explore it in poetry, this particular period of time in my life, and that made it make sense for me, I think, to think about it in that light, and to also, because I'm a fiction writer, to think about it as a story and as myself as like a character in these narrative poems, and that gave myself, I think, the necessary distance to know what to put in and what to keep out, and also, I worked with an editor who was really good at figuring out where the line was.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love reading memoir, and I personally love reading narrative poetry and, confessional work. But I know that it is often derided as a form. But I felt like it made sense for me to try my hand at it and just see what happened. And then I was quite pleased with the result, despite it being a kind of scary and fraught thing to think about publishing a memoir.
Yeah, it because it is often painful to read about someone else's trauma. I also found it odd at some points in the, because you're also very funny in the book. I found myself laughing, and then I stopped and I had to think, well, maybe I shouldn't be laughing at this part because this person is grieving. But I guess as the writer, as a person who's lived through it, you're able to laugh at some points through this journey, right?
Yes, and, because I also work as a comedy writer, and because for comedians, often the line between comedy and tragedy is You know, that saying is about the, you know, comedy is tragedy plus timing.
Sure, yeah.
And I think for comedy writers, it often happens right away. Like, we want to make jokes about things right away. And I think that there is something, like, something very funny about a breakup that you can't get over. Like, it's very, I think it's a very common experience at least once in your life. And it's also ridiculous. Like, I think anything humiliating is also kind of ridiculous. And I think that I can't really write, even if I'm writing something very serious, I stay very attuned to the irony and the funny moments. And when I'm, for example, when I'm building a character that's a fictional character, I often have to think about, you know, what do they find funny? Where do they find the humor in life? And I do the same thing when I'm writing about my own experience. And I think sometimes, you know, because I have a comedy background, I can lean on it a little too hard when I'm in the most vulnerable moments. But I also think that that's what I appreciate as a reader.
Mm.
And so I was hoping that I sort of hit a tonal, had some tonal consistency with that, and so that people would want to keep reading.
Do you find that writing some of these pieces, I mean, you write to say understand what happened. Does it lessen the pain of it all, at all, for you, as someone who's lived through it and then now, say, reflected on it in the form of writing, as you have?
Well, I think that I'm not entirely sure. I think that I'm not somebody who writes as a form of therapy, but I do think that all writers can't avoid their own biography as they're writing, and I think that especially if you're writing about something that happened to you or a period of your life filled with loss, it's inevitably going to create this, like, bookend on a certain period. And so in some ways I feel like the book came out and then now it's an object in the world and it explains a certain moment of my life in a certain type of language using a certain form. And in that way it does sort of close the door on the experience I was trying to reckon with, which I think is helpful. But I wouldn't say that it was therapeutic, and I wouldn't say that, I think that, like, the subject of the book is the personal journey and the grief and the loss, but that my own experience literally grieving or working through hard times is off the page. Like, I don't, It's not a diary, and it's not a transcript of therapy. You know, it's its own, through the artistic reckoning of it all, it becomes its own project.
There's some great lines in the book, and I found myself as I was reading it, writing down things that I found profound or wise. Even one line was, "You write that prose poetry can also be an unreliable memoir." Do you feel that way all the time when you're doing it, say?
When I'm writing prose poetry?
Yeah.
Or
is that something that you feel once you've read it or edited it and the sort?
I think that in certain cases, like creative nonfiction and memoir in general as a genre is unreliable because we are relying on our memories, which are never correct.
Mm.
And so we're offering a version of a truth, and that's the best you can kind of get, you know? Like, it's not raw data.
Mm.
So, and I, as a writer, I'm really interested in unreliability and in, you know, one side of the story or writers who are reckoning with difficult feelings in a certain way. And it kind of comes out in this unreliable narration.
And another great line in the book is, writing is a way of letting somebody go, and putting it in a book is a way of to make sure that they don't come back. And I guess that's a great luxury for a published writer, that probably a lot of us who haven't been published don't have, you know?
Well, it's funny. I think that you really have to, when you're writing about real people, nobody wants to be written about, I think. Like, I, for example, would love to be written about, but not in any way. Like, I would love somebody to write a song about me or something flattering. But, like, you know, it would be hard for me to be the subject of a book like this.
Mm.
And so I think that when I spoke to other memoir writers and friends of mine who've written memoir, you know, it's a process of understanding that people aren't going to like it who might appear in the book. And so writing the book is kind of a way of potentially losing people in a way. I know that, you know, people I know who've written about family, for example, have often caused big rifts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was trying to be fair and also, you know, I'm writing this anonymously in poetry. There's maybe like two people in my own personal life who would know anybody in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I'm trying to actually publicly talk about anybody. But it still is, you know, the idea of writing about something that is true or is your side of the story is it's sort of like you have to let go in the process. And I think that's what I was trying to get at with that line.
There's something I've been thinking about as I've been reading the collection, and I reread it the other day in preparing for our chat, because I'd read it, you know, a couple weeks before, say. Mm-hmm. And I've been wondering how to ask this question. And it's the one that, you know, that I'm sure a lot of people who pick up the book will read it and you know, think it's, there's so much to overcome. There's so much that you have to deal with when your heart gets broken. Why bother? You know what I mean? Why bother going through that? And, you know, a lot of people, you know, we know a lot of people in life who are alone. Do they know something that the rest of us don't say?
Well, it's funny because I'm someone who has been in relationships my entire life, like almost back to back, with short moments of singlehood in between.
Uh-huh.
And I do think, like, after this particular relationship that I talk about in the book, I did take a long period of time before I got into a new relationship to really, and it's actually really helpful because I realized, you know, there are some real benefits to being a single person. And the way that singlehood is depicted in popular culture and in literature is often that it's, you know, lonely and awful and very few people actually talk about the amazing reality of, like, not having to share your bed and, like, eat whatever you want, do whatever you want. There's a freedom to it that I think we don't speak about. And I think that, you know, I think for me, even though this is like a very difficult heartbreak that I wrote about, to me the risk is always worth it. I mean, I think we are on this earth to love each other, to love people, and to learn from each other in relation. And so I think that I don't think I personally would be someone who would, you know, take the journey alone for, you know, on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there are some people who are incredibly independent and solitary, and that's an interesting perspective to, like, read about and experience and to talk to someone about.
There are a number of points in the collection where you reflect on the writing community in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Have you always found it welcoming, or are these parts that you like, say, are they there because you've helped create those spaces?
I certainly haven't always felt the writing community to be welcoming.
Uh-huh.
I think that, you know, I've been involved in, in terms of Canadian publishing, I've done almost every job there is to do beyond copy editing because I am terrible at copy editing. But, you know, I started in small press publishing. I worked as a publicist and marketer in a small press, in a variety of small presses. I did, you know, I was a book reviewer, I was a book reporter, I did acquisitions, I did all sorts of things, and I feel like it's a very small town. Canadian literature is a very small town.
Yeah.
And I think that it can be very difficult to feel like you're a part of things in a lot of ways, because the Canadian literary establishment is, like, quite elitist, and it's hard to be a regular person who's also a part of the Canadian literary establishment, right, because you don't make a lot of money.
Sure.
And there's a lot of like systemic barriers for writers who kind of don't fit the bill in a lot of ways. And so I think that you know, I have a lot of people I care about who are writers and readers and involved in the publishing world, but I do think that it's not always a welcoming place, and people do their best, but it can be an alienating milieu sometimes. I think because of the fact that like the arts is not well funded and it's really hard to make a go of it, I think what ends up happening a lot of the time is that writers who have money or who come for money or who have like a lot of support in their lives financially end up being the community, you know. So I think those of us who struggle in a lot of ways or who have struggled, it's harder to feel a part of things. So I think that comes up in my writing quite a bit. And I wanted to, with this book in particular, talk about like the books that I usually say the character, but I guess it's me.
Yeah.
Me as the character, the protagonist, is reading and sort of taking in and is influencing the poetry and the relationship.
Yeah, you do hold other writers throughout the book with great reverence. There's mm-hmm. the one whose novel 15 years ago, you know, has that memorable line that you remember still. Another author who I wasn't familiar with, Michelle Tia. Speaking their name in the book, I mean, just signals how much they've meant to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's important to reflect that in your writing, right?
I think in this particular project, I was really interested in the way that literature and poetry was helping me shift this sort of intense perspective that I was reckoning with. And so I'm sort of consciously through the editorial process, like thought about how to include this sort of lineage of books and poems and novels that sort of, helped shift perspective in some ways, I guess, or, you know, the whole all books come from other books thing. I think that like every writer sort of has their own literary library that follows them around and influences the words that they choose.
Yeah. Do you have a big library that follows you around, say, wherever you live?
I do. In fact, it's a real problem. I just got some floor to ceiling shelves put in, and I still have boxes in the attic. So my one hoarder tendency, I think.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, I collect books too. I collect more books than I actually read, and it's something that you know, it's a good habit to have.
But right, of all the habits.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, yeah, there is a limit to space, isn't there? And it's always there fighting is. That.
Yeah, totally.
Throughout the book, talk about, as I mentioned, the industry itself and the writing community. And I mentioned a moment ago that you've been someone who's been able to create space that is welcoming welcoming to writers, not just where you live, but throughout the country. Do you find that that's an important part of your writing practice, say, as you continue?
You know, the role of community is an interesting one because I think oftentimes what I like about being a writer is the isolation, and I sitting alone with my books, and I like being a little weirdo with my library. But I think that the pandemic put into focus just how much community I rely on community in a way, and how much I missed it when I. You know, I used to complain about, oh, there's too many book events and that sort of thing. And then when it wasn't an option for a year and a half, 2 years, I felt like, oh, I actually do miss that part of being a writer. I think I have that introvert problem where, I tend to hole up and just want to read and write and not be the only thing.
Uh-huh.
And so the portion of like being a writer in the world where you have to like, hand the object over to other people and then talk about it and be interesting or charming or verbal at all, you know. It's hard. It's harder for me, I think, than the writing part. And I think other writers have all sorts of different strengths, and promotion is a thing that's always kind of hard, I think, for most writers. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's a line in the book, and I forgot to write it down. So if I butcher it, you'll correct me, please, and forgive me. You were booked to do a speaking engagement or something like that, and you say offhand that the it was about a book that you no longer think about or care about.
I think it was about a book I no longer believe in. Yeah, I think that a lot of writers have this experience where you work really, really hard on something for so many years, and then you're kind of tired of it when it comes out, and then you have to walk around and talk about it as though you're very passionate about it, even though you might be you might have moved on to the next thing. And I think I had a novel, my third novel kind of took off commercially in a way that I hadn't anticipated. And it was my first experience having to keep talking about a book that continued to sell, and it was such a blessing, and I was so happy about it, but it was also, like, kind of a struggle to keep the enthusiasm up when I wanted to be writing something new. Like a lucky problem, yeah.
Yeah, it's something I understand, because, like, you know, I talk to authors all the time, and it's usually, you know, several years, and because of the pandemic, they may have finished the book 5 years ago or so. And
exactly.
And they can't get it out until now, say, and sometimes they forget details, or, you know, and it comes across that they don't care, but you know, that's just the reality of the publishing business itself, I guess.
I think so.
Yeah. This is may not be any of my business, but how much of your writing week, say, is spent, because you do all other kinds of writing, how much is spent, say, devoted to writing poetry itself?
Well, you know, my last poetry book came out in 2008, The Cordial Thump, and when I put that book out, I felt like I had potentially rushed it a little bit, even though I look back and actually think it's okay. But for a while, I thought, okay, I'm not going to put out another poetry collection until I've really refined my voice, until I've really felt like I was better. And then I found after about 10 years that I really missed it, and I wanted to return to being a poet, which is what I was, the first sort of identity I had as a writer was as a poet. And I also missed the smallness of working with a small press, and also, the smallness on the page of, like, fragments and moments. And so I felt, I sort of gave up the dream of, like, oh, I'm not going to publish until I have something that's perfect. I'm going to actually just work on this idea I've had for a number of years and see what happens. And it ended up feeling like the right thing to do. I also think it was one of those moments where, I don't know how old you are, but I'm almost 50. And so you start to sort of such a lesson or loosen your grasp on, like, perfection or ideas of perfection and just sort of take more risks creatively, I find, as in middle age. So that was also part of the decision to return to poetry.
Is there a sense as a writer that you can say things in poetry that you couldn't say in another form of writing, say?
I certainly feel like there's a special, like, I don't want to say neuropathic. There's a special way that you can describe something or be in a moment or experience time in a poem that you can't in prose. And a lot of my fiction can be poetic or hybrid, or, you know, and certainly this book is definitely narrative and prose poems. But I do think that there's a grace and an allowance for playfulness and sort of puzzling through syntactical experimentation, in a way that you can't really get away with in a straightforward sentence. And I really like that.
Yeah, as a reader, as I was reading the poems in this collection, I love the chance to read between the lines and reread things again, which you can't really do if you're reading, say, you know, historical nonfiction or you know,
right.
nonfiction or a memoir even. There's that ability to say, figure out what the writer meant and infer and even read oneself in there, which you obviously don't get a chance to when you're reading, you know, a memoir even.
Not in the same way, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. There also seems to be, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, a rhythm or even a sort of structure in the pieces that you know when it's done, I guess. I was reading, you know, a couple of poems, and I think, you know, they vary in length as well. There's something that you hit at the end that you know that it's finished. Is that something? I mean, I got that as a reader, as a writer. Is that easy to come to, or does that come from the editing? Say
some of the endings or the feeling of it being complete didn't come until the final hour. But some of them sort of, I sculpted and fiddled with for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then finally it became clear that it was complete. And then once in the editorial process that, you know, I could fuck with word choice or line length or small cuts, but the heart of it was there. So it really depended on the poem, I think.
And you do bare your heart, throughout the book you know, I was going to say that I enjoyed the book, but I mean, it's hard to say that when you're reading about someone else's pain. But I can't tell you how much better I am for having read the book, because I
thank you.
There are pieces of wisdom in there that'll stay with me for a while, and I'm sure you've heard that from readers of the collection already. Have you?
You know, this is one of my first. I think you're my first interview, because the book doesn't come out until next week. I've done a few in-person events, but no, I haven't heard that yet, and so I'm really pleased. Thank you so much for expressing that.
Well, long may it continue. I so appreciate your time today. Thanks for this.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for your interest.
The book is called No Credit River. It's published by Book Hug Press. Its author, Zoe Whittle, joined me on the line from Prince Edward County, Ontario, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.